Chapter 42, Superstar. Places, Star shouted, clapping her hands. Crew assembled around the spreading Joshua trees as actors took their marks. Nico on a hammock wearing sunglasses, Amelia carrying a tray of sparkling lemonade that actually gave off sparks, and Benedict prepared to enter from the Airstream trailer. In the near distance, unicorns frolicked. Someone turned down the birds for crying out loud. She waved her arms, while off to one side of the glammed-up desert stage, Jason made a small tweak. They went from 4 crows and 2 hawks to 5 sparrows. Better. Glamored stage sets were 1,000 times better than the old 3 walls they used to use, but there were a lot of variables to tweak. Star settled into her director's chair and waved a Tootsie Pop. A brownie darted forward, slammed the slate, and the camera dryads began rolling. Now, Roland, said Amelia, as Wilhelmina, strolling across the sand as sparks rained down on her tray, I certainly hope you've reconsidered my concerns about keeping that space changeling in the trailer. Nico, as Roland, swung merrily in his hammock and raised the sunglasses. With Benedict as nanny, I foresee no issues, he projected in his smooth, rolling voice. I've grown accustomed to his beak. Don't be so mythist. Cue Benedict. The griffin padded into the shot, wearing a baby carrier across his chest. Right now, they were using a doll as cargo, but backstage a slew of infants were being made up to resemble critters from the planet Oho for close-ups. The doll was not quite sitting right in the carrier, and Benedict's gait was not helping.
He won't eat, squawked the griffin. I've never even tried regurgitated pellets on a human before, but I think Lil Naz is...
The baby, the doll, slid from the carrier onto the ground. Star sat up. They were tight on time. They were always tight on time. That had never changed. Let it roll, she thought. Give him some lead on this. Benedict had only been with them for 2 weeks, and after she'd caught him molting from nerves the other day, she'd reminded him of the concept of yes and. Go with the flow, she said. Catch the weasel with your talons if you miss the prairie dog, right? It was important to communicate with mythic actors in a vocabulary they understood. Mythics rarely had the patience to remain with the show for long, but ever since TPTB began allowing them to make extended guest appearances 83 years ago, quite a few had become excellent at make-believe and invention that did not require spells or charms. These days, anyone could appear on the show, children, babies, animals, mythics. Star had always been a great supporter of diversity. Meanwhile, Wilhelmina dropped the tray in horror, clutching at her face. He's passed out! Benedict, who played Benedict the Nanny, all mythic thespians went by their character name on and off camera due to ongoing true name difficulties with humans, reached forward with a curved talon and plucked the doll by the head, inserting it back into the carrier.
No harm, no foul, he squawked.
Cut, Star sighed, sliding from the chair. She smoothed Benedict's ruffled feathers. Good effort, but you can't lift a baby, even a changeling from another world, by its head. She made a swooping gesture with her hand. Going again in 5. The set relaxed, and Harry swooped in to adjust loose coifs, feathers, and fur. A kitsune raced up behind Star, standing erect, all 6 tails fluffed out as she craned forward. Miss Star, she tapped a pen on her notepad. I am hoping we can pick up our discussion this afternoon. Your memoir is coming so slowly. We still have 98 years to write down. Star wondered if agreeing to have the kitsune memoirist on the set had been a good idea. 1 century of Tune In Tomorrow was TPTB's latest gambit to goose ratings, and they'd sent Kit down 3 months ago to take note of the recollections of its cast members, starting with Star. Covering the nearly 100 years since she'd been with the show had meant reliving those first heady, confused months when it seemed the series had no tomorrows left. But carving out blocks of time to sit with the writer had proven challenging. 2 words for you, Star told the writer. Volume 1. The vixen sagged against the chair. Ms. Star, be reasonable. We still have to discuss the great brownie unionization with SAG-AFTRA beyond the veil of having humans required to live in their non-work hours on the mortal side of the veil, of the crossovers with some of the trope towns,
of the final disposition of Fiona Ballantyne, who in my records still owes $27,910,732.26 in back pay to the bros. Details take time, said Starr, who'd been keeping her own tally. By her calculation, Fiona would have to work for the next 165 years before she could consider herself clear. There are deadlines, Kit protested further. The Seelie want a completed tome, not a first volume. Now, we left off with you on the roof with Maverick and Nico about to come to some sort of decision. Starr was half-listening and gave Nico a wave on the set. He blew her a kiss that tingled her toes. Kit was still nattering on. Talking with the fox was enjoyable, but she had no real worries about Tune In Tomorrow's future. Starr's endless award, 18, number 18, 10 years ago, had gifted her with the ability to fashion 230 glass objects each day, which had initially seemed useless, until Mav jokingly suggested over beers one night that she could create artificial glass eyes. That was the craziest idea she'd ever heard, at least until making a few thousands of them and storing them in the not-so-bottomless pit boosted ratings. Starr resolved that if all TPTB cared about were eyeballs, she would give them as many as they wanted. One century was ambitious, even for TPTB, though. According to what Jason had told her, it was widely anticipated that the book would sell well across mythic lands and beyond to places where no one could even watch the show. Perhaps even on her side of the gate, where the publishers would label the show's story a novel. Lunch, she told Kit. We'll talk more at lunch. Now, delightful as you are to have around, I think you should leave the set for a bit. You're distracting Benedict. He is prey-driven, and you look obtainable. Eep! Kit barked, ducking behind a camera dryad. Mav strode over, waving a sheaf of paper. Pages, darling, he said. Starr hugged him with one arm as he flipped through the revisions. Seems we can get Fee out of that ice cave this afternoon if we speed things up a hair.
Not if I have anything to do with it.
Nico hopped over, eyeing the script.
Hey, wait. Valencia knows how to scuba dive all of a sudden? In Arctic lake temperatures? With ice dragons?
Starr grinned at having them both near her. If it lets us get her soaking wet, I'm all for it. Having been fired by After Yesterday and later Forever Paradise, Fiona had floundered in the topographically restricted outer perimeter environment, T-R-O-P-E, trope town, of Slasher, where every movie saw her killed off in a horrible manner within the first 20 minutes. Spent a brief period she wouldn't talk about, not even to Nico, in Second Chance. Then come crawling back to Tomorrow two decades ago. Starr had hired her back with the understanding that Fiona would have no control over her story. She then set about having the former Lady Marlborough bankrupted, detitled, and subject to every form of narrative-based humiliation possible. Currently, she was a prisoner of a Yeti named Francois, who was taking revenge for all the pelts the ex-lady had worn. He read her free verse all day and made her fry reindeer steaks at night. Roland was searching for her, but not all that hard. His eye had been turned toward Wilhelmina. And so it went. Starr had never had visions of anything beyond acting, but shortly after Tune In Tomorrow received its renewal, Jason had marbled them to a cliffside diner, once again raising her hopes that he'd become curious about human female anatomy after all, and propositioned her. He wanted her to be the new Chris, his second in command. "The show's my immortal life," he said grandiosely. "But TPTB can't find me anyone who gives me balance. This show is too much for one fawn to cope with alone, especially when that fawn would like to gallop across the South American pampas or dive off the Great Barrier Reef from time to time." "But humans don't run this show," she'd protested. "We're too... what did that Seelie executive say about us after we got the show running again? Puny." "Darling, you are much more than a puny human." He'd tousled her hair. "By my accounting, you are a daring young thing. You are Samantha Warnocker. You are Sam Draper. You are the one who helped save this show. Beyond that, you are Starr Weatherby. To use the words of a mildly talented human poet, you contain multitudes." He'd sipped his champagne. "Also, you are my mango." She'd taken the job. Now, as Starr examined the revisions, green and spearmint flavored, a fox curled up in her director's chair, and she nearly fell over. "Kit!"
Star jerked back, bumping into Nico. Why are you still here?
Right here is the safest place to be, said the kitsune, adorably resting her paws on the wooden arm of the chair. Also, I'm dying to know, how did everything on the roof turn out in the end?
Nico folded his arms, and Mav tucked his chin down. A sly smile crept across Star's face. With hundreds of years to play with, there was no point in limiting oneself to one plate at the banquet. Star and Nico and Mav had come to an arrangement some time ago. The key was in letting each of them know that they were always her number one, and for them to make sure that, whatever other dalliances they might undertake, that she was the highest star in their heavens.
Two more words for you, Kit. Volume 2.
Nico chuckled. As good an answer as any.
I'll scoot.
Mav planted a kiss on her cheek and Star tingled. Be around if you need me. I always have, she thought, shooing Kit out of the chair and hopping into it herself.
Places, everybody!
Oh, so you're ready now? Nico raised an eyebrow. Star laughed and set her hands over her heart. Nico, sweetheart, I was born ready. The end.